New documents show that before Facebook bought WhatsApp, it feared it.
It was actually quite concerned about WhatsApp and other companies like it and how they were slowly morphing into social networks like Facebook.
And Uber's shares hit a record low.
What happened with Uber is you had millions and millions more shares being sold than is typical once that lockup period for early investors ends.
Plus, federal prosecutors charge former Twitter employees with spying for Saudi Arabia. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at what a trove of internal documents reveals about Facebook's thinking before it bought WhatsApp in 2014 and what that might mean for regulators, here's what you missed. The Justice Department charged two former Twitter employees and a Saudi Arabian national with spying for the country. The complaint alleges that they were looking for information about people who'd published posts that were critical of the Saudi royal family. One former employee, he's named Ahmed Abuamu, was arrested in Seattle on charges of illegally acting as an agent of Saudi Arabia. The two others remain at large and are believed to be in Saudi. A Twitter spokesperson said the company restricts access to sensitive account information to a limited group of trained and vetted employees. They added, quote, "We recognize the lengths bad actors will go to try and undermine our service." And something radical is happening in China. The government is letting companies fail. Up until recently, this wasn't the case, but now we're reporting the country has more than 90 U.S.-style specialized bankruptcy courts. From Hong Kong, Quentin Webb has more.
China has got a lot of corporate debt, and it really needs to get away from this traditional idea that in many cases, the local government or some other body would step in and bail companies out. Actually, you know, companies need to fail a bit more, and in some cases they need to fail and then be allowed to re-emerge from a bankruptcy proceeding in the same way that Chapter 11 can be used in America as a sort of way, you know, to kind of nurse a company back to health.
One reason for the change? It has to do with China's slowing growth. Here's Quentin again.
Recall a few years ago that China was growing by double-digit percentages year on year, and now growth is more like 6% a year. And really, when you have that kind of absolutely phenomenal growth rate, that masks a lot of problems. And when, as is happening now, the economy starts to come back down to earth, weaker companies tend to kind of feel the strain a bit more. And that is exacerbated at the moment, of course, by the pressures that are emerging due to these trade strains of the United States.
And here's some trivia for you. Can you guess which company is bigger than Volkswagen, the continent's biggest car maker, and HSBC, Europe's biggest bank? If you said LVMH, that stands, of course, for Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, congratulations. This week, LVMH's market capitalization topped $222 billion for the first time. From Paris, Matthew Dalton explains why LVMH is now valued at nearly the same amount as Coke and Boeing.
The fact is that the global economy has been evolving in a way that people's discretionary incomes keep growing. You know, the emergence of the middle class and the upper middle class in China, and they have a real appetite to buy luxury goods. And then in the West, which is, I guess, a sad point, is that growing income inequality means that wealthier folks have more disposable income to spend on the stuff that LVMH is selling.
Now, our main story this morning. It has to do with internal company documents that were released yesterday from Facebook. They're from confidential court filings from a lawsuit brought by an app developer in California state court. They reveal that Facebook was worried about the threat that WhatsApp posed to its core business. Parmi Olsen is in London. So Parmi, walk me through, what do these documents reveal?
Well, there's 7,000 roughly pages of documents, mostly emails and also depositions of witnesses. So there's actually a lot that gets revealed in these documents. But one of the many things that is revealed is the extent to which Facebook was worried about messaging apps back in 2013, the year before it bought WhatsApp. It was actually quite concerned about WhatsApp and other companies like it and how they were
slowly morphing into social networks like Facebook.
Yeah, so can we talk a little bit more about that? Why would WhatsApp pose a threat to Facebook? You know, I've used it before to message friends in Europe. Americans aren't as familiar with it. It's very different from what Facebook is, though.
Yeah, that's a great point. Back in 2013, it was the same kind of deal. But if you looked at messaging apps in Asia, like KakaoTalk and WeChat and Line, those were very similar to WhatsApp, but they were going a step further and becoming more like social networks where people could share photos with one another, share videos, share content. They were looking a lot like Facebook. And in the emails that were released on Wednesday, between Mark Zuckerberg and some of his top executives, there was a lot of discussion about these particular apps in Asia. At one point, an executive said, "These apps pose a real threat to us because they want to become like social networks." Mark Zuckerberg agreed with that. And there was talk about blocking them from advertising on Facebook and getting access to Facebook user data. Now, WhatsApp, as you point out, wasn't becoming like a social network, but the big advantage it had over Facebook was that it had better user engagement. In other words, more people were spending more time on WhatsApp than on Facebook. And that really worried Facebook.
So skip ahead. Spoiler alert, Facebook buys WhatsApp. Why do these documents reveal something that might be of interest, say, to regulators today?
It's a great question because that's something we're still not clear on. And we don't know what the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S., which is doing the bulk of the antitrust investigations, will be using from these documents as any kind of ammunition for some kind of antitrust case against Facebook. But certainly the discussions between the executives about the threat of some of these companies, the way they were blocking them from using their ad, using their platform for ads or to use their data, that I think will be of interest to regulators. Another thing we have in our story yesterday is that the FTC has actually reached out to the founders of WhatsApp this year. There has been no meeting yet. It has been scheduled, but certainly WhatsApp, the founders of WhatsApp, and the sale to Facebook is of great interest to competition regulators in the U.S. right now.
So what does Facebook have to say about all of this?
Facebook acknowledges the documents. It doesn't deny the veracity of the documents. It just says that they were taken out of context, that they were cherry-picked, and that they have been put together by people with an agenda. But fundamentally, Facebook does not deny that these documents are real. These are real emails between top executives of the company.
So what happens next? Where do we go from here? And we have these documents. We can see that these discussions happened. Sort of what's the next step in this investigation?
Really, that's very much happening inside the FTC. But of course, there is a lot of noise coming from the likes of Elizabeth Warren, from advocacy groups, even from ex-Facebook executives. And so there's a lot of calls for regulators to come in, whether it's to break up the company. A lot of people say that's too radical, too drastic. But again, at this point, things are moving very slowly. As I mentioned, yes, the FTC has reached out to the founders of WhatsApp, but there haven't been any meetings yet. So I think if something happens, it's going to take a while. This is very slow going.
You can find Parmi's story with Sam Schachner up on WSJ.com. On to markets. Uber shares hit a record low yesterday. They fell nearly 4% to close at $26.94. Caitlin Ostroff explains just what happened.
So yesterday, the IPO lockup period ended for Uber, and traditionally you do see more shares being sold than other points in a trading period. But what happened with Uber is you had millions and millions of more shares being sold than is typical once that lockup period for early investors ends. And so that comes amid questions of, you know, how profitable is Uber, which investors have been questioning since quarterly earnings came out weaker than they expected. And so there's questions of where the company goes from here, how profitable is it in the long run, and is it worth the valuation that it had been posted as?
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. So Some more company earnings for you, including Disney, which reports after the bell. We'll also get an interest rate decision from the UK's central bank, the Bank of England. We're not expecting a rate change there, but close attention will be paid to anything the bank has to say about the economic impact of the Brexit process. And on Monday, Virgin Hyperloop One sent out a request for proposals to states to build a Hyperloop certification track. Now we're reporting that Missouri is looking to be the winner. It's a bet that superfast transportation could transform the state. Shandy Race explains.
The opportunity that states and, you know, in my story, I talk about Missouri, the opportunity that they're seeing here is that they could become the center for all future research that, you know, goes into Hyperloop, for all safety testing. And then ultimately, they could potentially be the central node of a national Hyperloop network. And that is incredibly exciting to these states, especially states in the Midwest like Missouri that, you know, don't really have something that's attracting top talent at the moment.
Finally, you can't see the images, but this is what it sounded like when the Berlin Wall came down 30 years ago this week. Spanning 96 miles and encircling West Berlin, the wall was built in 1961 to prevent East Germans from defecting into the democratically controlled West. Now, three decades on, we report that the latest German government report on the state of reunification shows that not everyone's happy with the wall's destruction. 57% of East Germans feel like second-class citizens, and only 38% consider reunification a success. And as for the wall itself? Well, today we've got an amazing infographic showing the some 237 locations in the more than 40 countries that chunks of the wall ended up in. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.